Alia.
And I'm Taya from the Moonlight Mix.
And you're listening on CJLO 1690 AM in Montreal.
Multiple groups in the city have condemned the participation of the cycling team Israel Premier Tech at the Grand Prix cycling race this coming Sunday. Israel Premier Tech is a cycling team who were invited by the UCI, the world's governing body for the sport of cycling, to race in various cities, including Montreal. The team, Israel Premier Tech, is owned by Canadian-Israeli business magnate Sylvan Adams, who is a friend of Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, a man wanted by the International Court of Justice for war crimes. Groups like Palestinian and Jewish Unity, the Palestinian Youth Movement, and Bikers for Palestine have all condemned the participation of Israel Premier Tech at the race and are urging the City of Montreal to call for the team's ban. This is Bill Vandriel, an organizer for the local group Bikers for Palestine.
This is a team owned by Sylvan Adams, who's previously a Montreal-based billionaire. He makes it very clear that the point of the team is to promote Israel. In his own words, he talks about how it can be used to change the image of Israel on the world stage. And when it comes to what's happening in Gaza, he doesn't mince words at all. When he's talking about the genocide, he talks gleefully about how they're going to mop up in Gaza, this kind of genocidal rhetoric. And we've seen as well, he's a close personal friend of Benjamin Netanyahu. And even Netanyahu is tweeting his support for the team.
There is precedent for bans from the UCI on political and moral grounds. The UCI banned Russian teams from competition after the invasion of Ukraine. Vandriel says a similar stance must be taken at different levels when it comes to Israel.
We're outraged by this. We're disgusted that an event in our city is going to be used to promote a genocide in that way. We're disgusted by the complicity of Valerie Plante and the city government. We're disgusted by the complicity of the UCI.
The groups will be protesting the event as the team rides by the Georgia Tiencartier Monument at the base of Mont Royal on Sunday, September 14th at 1 p.m.
Today, we would look back in shame in the way that Hitler was able to host the Olympics. So I think we need to recognize that there is a role, what we call sports washing, which is using sports to kind of normalize and make it acceptable and kind of manufacture the consent for these atrocities to be carried out.
Israel Premier Tech would not respond for comment, but refers to itself as a, quote, professional cycling team. Sylvan Adams has called the team ambassadors for Israel. For the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Adam Innes.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Tommy John Show here on CJLO 1690 AM in Montreal. Hope everyone's doing well. What a show we have for you guys today. Week 2 in the NFL was incredible. Just amazing game after amazing game after an amazing game, especially in that 1 o'clock window. We will break it all down for you here on the Tommy John Show. Big action in college football over the weekend. Huge win by the Texas A&M Aggies, the Georgia Bulldogs. We'll get into that. Major League Baseball, the postseason push is officially on, and the wild card race is heating up. We'll get into that as well. Not to mention, we are less than 2 weeks away from the Ryder Cup at Bethpage Black in New York, so we got big golf news to get into as well. But we're going to start today by breaking down the NFL. Week 2 concludes tonight with two Monday Nighters, which is fun. You have Tampa Bay taking on Houston at 7, and then a later game at 10 o'clock. You have the Chargers, after that great win in Brazil over the Chiefs in Week 1, taking on the Las Vegas Raiders. And they had a great win in Week 1, going to New England, spoiling Mike Vrabel's debut, getting the win. Geno was impressive. Brock Bowers was impressive. That defense played very well. And this is a little rivalry now between Jim Harbaugh and Pete Carroll that has gone on for years. So they coached against each other in college. When Southern Cal was the dominant program, Jim Harbaugh spoiled a few of their years. When he was on the come up with Stanford, they won several games against Pete Carroll and the Trojans. So there was a bit of a spicy rivalry there. Then, of course, all those years ago in the NFC West with Harbaugh and the 49ers, Pete Carroll and the Seahawks, they played countless classics, especially that NFC Championship game was in 2013. With the Richard Sherman, Michael Crabtree situation. So, now here, Pete Carroll and Jim Harbaugh in the same division is again. And it's a very good rivalry. And I think both of these teams are threats in the AFC. Now, the Chargers have more talent. Justin Herbert and that Marion Hampton kid's very good. Ladd McConkey's one of the best slot receivers in football. They got an elite offensive line. That defense is ferocious. So, in all, there's more depth and talent on the Chargers. But you look at this Raiders team. They've got an all-world tight end in Brock Bowers. They have Geno Smith. So, we can criticize Geno all we want about where he ranks at quarterbacks. He's not great. He's not elite. To me, Geno Smith is a top 12 to 15 quarterback in the NFL, and he's a gunslinger, man. He can push the ball down the field, got one of the stronger arms in football. He's got some good weapons, Jacoby Myers there as well, and this Ashton Jeanty kid. Let's see if he blossoms into a superstar, the kid out of Boise State who's really, really talented. So, to me, this is going to be a very good game tonight. 10 o'clock start is a bit crazy. I'll stay up for it. I love football, so I'm going to stay up and watch that one. But that's a very big AFC West matchup early on in the year. But we'll preview the game tonight, the two games tonight later on in the show. We have to recap what happened yesterday in the NFL. We'll briefly mention Green Bay later on in the program. They look very good. They were dominant over the Commanders on Thursday night. But let's talk about the Kansas City Chiefs for a second. We're going to get to the 1 o'clock games. Don't worry. We're going to talk Giants, Cowboys. We're going to talk Pats, Dolphins. We're going to talk Joe Burrow and the Bengals. That is just a horrific situation there. But the Bengals starting 2-0 finally under Zach Taylor. But it comes with the worst outcome they could have hoped for. They would have lost that game 100 times out of 100 if it meant Joe Burrow would have made it to week number 3 and stayed healthy. That's a disaster. We'll get into the impact of Joe Burrow being out 3 months on the Bengals. Can they just make the playoffs and hope Joe is healthy for when they get there? That will be a huge topic of conversation today on the program. But we have to talk about Kansas City. It was the Super Bowl rematch. It was built up as the game of the week. And on paper it was. You had the Eagles who are looking to send another statement saying that game wasn't a fluke where we blew out Kansas City. We are the best team in the NFL and we're going to prove it. And they went into Arrowhead and they won the football game. Was it the most exciting game in the world? No. Heavens no. It was a lot of punts, not a whole lot of explosive plays. It was not a great football game. But it concerned me yesterday for Kansas City. And again, I said on the program that this looks to be the weakest Chief team I can remember. There's not a superstar wide receiver. I'm not giving Xavier Worthy that crown yet. Said this all before the year. I'm not giving Rashee Rice that crown yet. He's coming off an injury. He's suspended. He's not a great, great receiver. But I understand he's good. Travis Kelce's not who he was. Not even 2 years ago. Last year, he's not the same player. There's just no firepower on this football team. There's Patrick Mahomes with the below average offensive line and not a lot of great weapons. Now, the defense is still ferocious. They still got a top five defense in the league, in my opinion. But the Chiefs are not going to be winning these games like they did a few years ago or even last year. They're not good enough in these one-score games to win anymore. And it's scary because we're so used to seeing Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid, Travis Kelce finding a way. And yesterday in that football game, they showed signs, but then in the red zone with a chance to take the lead late in that third quarter, it was a boneheaded play by Travis Kelce. Mahomes hits him right in the hands at the goal line, and he's already turning up field, it looks like. Was not expecting that ball to come up fast, whatever the hell it was. Hits him right in the hands, flies up, pick, and it's returned 50 yards the other way. And that was pretty much the ball game. Once Kansas City didn't score there because it was a grind to move the ball the whole day, they finally established a drive. They got the running game going a little bit with Pacheco and Hunt. They hit a few big plays down the field. They had second and goal, whatever it was. They had to punch it in there, and they couldn't do it, and that was the ball game. Now, I know the Chiefs last year weren't an offensive juggernaut. They weren't scoring 40, 50 points a game. But they looked a hell of a lot better than this. This is concerning. And I'm not going to full-blown hit the panic button. They started off with two brutal games to start the year. The Chargers, who are a great team, and the defending Super Bowl champions. But I'm very concerned. The Chiefs just have to find a way to stay afloat, stay in the wild card race until Xavier Worthy and Rashee Rice are back. When those guys are back, I think the Chiefs have a chance in the AFC. But until then, they just do not have the horses to get it done. They just don't. It's not on Mahomes, not entirely. It's not on Andy Reid. They're just not a good enough football team. There they aren't. And Mahomes doesn't look 100%. I understand it. He overthrew Thornton several times in that game yesterday. It's weird seeing Kansas City in this kind of state. They haven't been 0-2 in the Mahomes era. First time since 2014 that they've started 0-2. It's not this doesn't have the same Chiefs feel about it. The Chiefs used to be inevitable. They go into a game, you knew they would win. That's not the case anymore. The Chiefs are not like that. They aren't. It's a grind to score points. It's a long, drawn-out series. They have to convert on third and shorts, and they take these long possession drives to score points, whether it be a field goal or a touchdown. That wasn't the case with the old-school Chiefs going to the Super Bowl. I'm sorry, I know they went last year, but the first Super Bowl run, or even the one 2 years ago when Mahomes won the MVP, that offense had firepower. There is no firepower on this offense whatsoever. None. And that aura of invincibility is just gone. I think it lost it in that Super Bowl. The Eagles beat them like a rented mule in the Super Bowl. And then nothing's happened. Think about it. Teams are not fearing Kansas City anymore. They looked at the Eagles like, Jesus, the Eagles beat them 33-0. And you saw how the Chargers coached in that game. And you saw how the Eagles again coached in this game yesterday. They coached Harbaugh and Nick Sirianni coached against the Chiefs like they were the better team. They were more aggressive, they took more chances, and it paid off. And Jalen Hurts didn't even play that well yesterday. And Saquon Barkley had a good game. It wasn't a Saquon Barkley last year type of game. 22 carries for 88 yards. And Devontae Smith had 4 catches, and A.J. Brown had 5 catches. But like it wasn't a great performance by the Eagles by any stretch of imagination, and it was still good enough to get it done. It's worrisome. It's very worrisome. I'm still going to give Kansas City the benefit of the doubt. I have to do that. They've been too good for so long, but I am very, very, very concerned about Kansas City. They have to, this week against the Giants, Sunday Night Football, that is a monster game early in the year. The Chiefs start off, if they start off 0-3, my goodness, the reaction that's going to be going around Kansas City. And it's a hard schedule. I know they have the Giants next week, and it's easy to overlook the Giants, even though they played pretty darn well yesterday against Dallas, at least offensively. But then they got Baltimore, the Lions, the Commanders, the Bills, the Broncos, the Colts now. That looked like an easy win earlier in the year. Not anymore. So it is a tough, tough schedule, and I'm interested, very interested to see how Kansas City responds from this. It's unfamiliar territory for Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. 0-2, last place in the division. And they will be last place even after tonight. Both the Raiders and the Chargers are 1-0. So it's unfamiliar territory for the Mahomes era Chiefs. That's just what it is. Here's Patrick Mahomes following the 20-17 loss in the Super Bowl rematch to the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, I think just after the first 2 weeks, you know, just you let games slip away. You know that we played two good football teams and made mistakes in big moments, stuff that we're not used to doing. I think we're coming together as a team, man. I mean, when you deal with adversity, it's about how you deal with it. And obviously, this isn't how we wanted to start, but how are we going to respond? So I'm excited for the next few weeks to see who wants to be challenged and how we can get back and really get after it.
Does it feel disjointed offensively?
I mean, there's times. I think just there's little things here and there. I mean, getting a ball batted, big play, missing some deep shots. Things here and there that we just did, we didn't do at a high enough level. Even like the first throw, overthrowing Noah on that cover two look, I mean, seeing it right, just not making the throw. And so, in this league, you got to make those throws, and I'll be better as the season goes on.
Can you take me through the throw to Travis there at the goal line? What were you seeing? What do you think went wrong on the play?
Yeah, I mean, we got the defense that we wanted. You know, we expect them to play that 0-0 with the whole player, with the safety. I threw it just a tad too early, you know, just trying to put it on his body low before that whole player got there. And I think if I can put it more on his body and not so far out in front of him, then he can catch it, take the hit, and get in the end zone.
So that's Patrick Mahomes following the loss yesterday for Kansas City. He was being very polite on that Kelce thing. He put the ball, even Brady on the broadcast, like, oh, he put it right on him. And even Travis Kelce at this point of his career should come down with that catch. I don't think there's any question about that. But it's interesting. Kansas City at this point in the year, they have not played well. They did not play well at all against the Chargers, and I gave them a pass. It's a 12, 13-hour flight from Brazil against a divisional opponent who's motivated. It was a tough spot for them. But yesterday, that was that offense. The defense will be fine. They're going to win 7-8 games minimum. But if you look at the AFC now, there's more teams that are factors. You obviously have Baltimore and Buffalo, I believe, are a class above everyone else. The Bengals, okay, Joe Burrow's out, but the Steelers are going to be a factor. Now in the AFC South, it looks like Jacksonville, Indy, Houston are all factors. Then you have Denver, Chargers, Raiders, and then is someone else who needs, are the Patriots. Drake May looked very good yesterday. The defense made a big stop at the end. Will Mike Vrabel's coaching rub off later in the year? Now, obviously, I would take Kansas City over most of those teams. There's some teams in the AFC that are much better than people thought. The Raiders are much better than people thought. The Colts are much better than people thought. I think the Jaguars, who should have won that game yesterday, are much better than people thought. And the Chiefs are worse. It's going to be a grind for them to win that division. Denver looks better than them. And the Chargers already played them and beat them. But I'm not going to concern. I'm concerned, but I'm not selling my Chiefs stock just yet. I'm not doing it. Mahomes is there. Andy Reid's there. Worthy will be back. Rashee Rice will be done with that suspension by week 6, week 7. I'm not sounding the alarm just yet. But I am incredibly, incredibly concerned. Because this is a football team. It's just a grind just to pick up first downs. To think this is where we are in after 5 Super Bowl appearances and 3 championships. And making the championship game, AFC championship game, every year. This does not look like the same Chiefs team or has the same feel that those past Chiefs teams had. And if you're Philadelphia, you just went on the road and you won a good football game on the road in a tough environment. So that's a good win by Philadelphia. And I'm not concerned about the Eagles just yet either. Come on, they're 2-0. That hasn't been pretty. Still, you win and you move on. But Kansas City, this is unfamiliar territory for them. So we have to talk about Joe Burrow. That is just a crushing, crushing injury for the Bengals. They have never started 2-0 under Zach Taylor. They're notorious for just these slow starts under Zach Taylor. 1-1, they would take it and run. 2-0 under Zach Taylor? Oh my God, the Bengals are in the driver's seat. But it comes at a cost, of course, because there's no franchise that is cursed like the Cincinnati Bengals. Even when they get it right with draft picks, even when they get it right in free agency, even when they do the smart thing, they get burnt. They listen to Joe Burrow in the offseason. They sign Ja'Marr Chase. They signed T. Higgins. They got a deal done with Trey Hendrickson. They signed, finally, after all the offseason shenanigans with Shamar Stewart, they get that done. And the defense wins them a football game in week one. Al Golden from Notre Dame comes in, and the defense looks much better. They're 2-0, and yet the season's pretty much over. And I'm not saying Jake Browning can't play. I'm not saying that. He's a gunslinger. He turns the ball over, but he'll have good numbers, and Ja'Marr Chase is going to be right up there in receiving yards, and T. Higgins is going to have a big year. Jake Browning's going to win the Bengals some football games now. But you can't win a Super Bowl with Jake Browning. You can't do it. And the fact that Joe Burrow, it's like I feel so bad for him because he is a top 4-3 quarterback in the National Football League. He is. And the Bengals, that offensive line is just killing him. We're getting into Andrew Luck territory right now. The Colts messed around during the Andrew Luck era, kind of coasted, saying, oh, our quarterback's so good, it doesn't matter. And then he just takes a beating and a beating and a beating. And eventually, he's made his money because he's so good. He signs his big contract. But it's not worth it. It's not worth it to get your head kicked in every single week. So what did Andrew Luck do? Still at the height of his powers, retired. Saying, I'm not going to win a Super Bowl here. I'm 29, 30 years old. I've made a boatload of money, a couple hundred million dollars in contracts. I'm good. I'm set for life. My kids are set for life. My grandkids are set for life. And I'm 30 years old or 29 years old. I'm going to retire. Now, I'm not saying Joe Burrow's going to do that because I truly believe Joe Burrow loves football more than anything else. And Andrew Luck, as great as a quarterback as he was, he had other passions, wanted to do other things. Now you see he's heavily involved with Stanford. Excuse me. It's different. But it would not surprise me at a certain point, Joe Burrow's like, get me the hell out of Cincinnati or I'm done. It's unbelievable. They just, can they not? How many years has Joe Burrow been in Cincinnati? 5, 6? And you can't get him a better offensive line? Are you serious? It's unbelievable. And I feel for the Bengals. Now, can Cincinnati stay afloat with Jake Browning until Burrow gets back 3 months from now? It's the end of the year. So basically, can Jake Browning get the Bengals to 9-8, 10-7? Who knows? But if Joe Burrow stays healthy and they hang on to win that game, we are talking about the Bengals being a serious threat to get to the Super Bowl. And I believe that. Because the defense looked better. They're forcing turnovers. Hendrickson's all up in people's face again. And Al Golden's a very good defensive coordinator. We saw it at Notre Dame last year. And look at Notre Dame's defense since he's left. He's a very good defensive coordinator. They're turning the ball over. And they would have had a top 3 quarterback in the NFL, Ja'Marr Chase, 2-0 finally under Zach Taylor. The sky's the limit for the Bengals. But instead, we sit here. September the 15th. The Bengals are 2-0, but they don't have Joe Burrow. It sucks, man. I hate it for the Bengals fans. Hate it for Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, obviously Joe Burrow, just because they deserve a chance with a good defense to go and win a Super Bowl. And it could still happen. Jake Browning could be a Brock Purdy. Who knows? He's won games for them in the past. But this is not the same team. And it's just such a gut punch. They're finally 2-0. Finally a decent start under Zach Taylor. But Joe Burrow's injured. And he's not coming back for 3 months. And in the most Bengals way possible, it sounded like, oh, just a toe injury, questionable to return. Oh, sounds like the Brock Purdy injury. Okay, he'll be out 2-3 weeks, but then he'll be back. But in the most Bengal way possible, it's 3 months. It's the worst version of that toe injury. He needs surgery. It's 3 months. And that's just a killer. Now, if we want to look at the other team that played yesterday in that game, Jacksonville, I saw a lot of things I loved. And they got, don't get me wrong, they got hosed on that Travis Hunter pass interference. That was not pass interference. That's an absolute joke. And that gave the Bengals the game pretty much. But I saw some things I liked. Now, Trevor Lawrence, I know he's turning the ball over. He's made some good throws. He was hitting people right in their hands. Brian Thomas Jr. had a shocking game, dropped a few passes. That number five, was it Brown? He dropped the guaranteed touchdown. You couldn't have placed it any better, and he dropped it. That was a disaster. To me, the Jaguars should be 2-0, but I like Liam Cohen, and I'm still not selling my Trevor Lawrence stock. He played well for parts of that football game in a tough environment. I think the Jags will be okay. But that is a game. The fact they didn't kick the field goal earlier on, I didn't like that. It's just an inexperienced coaching staff at week two and some boneheaded plays by the quarterback that cost them and a brutal pass interference call on the sidelines. But a division a year ago, which couldn't buy a win, and Houston won by just default, is a much better division now. The Colts are 2-0, and we'll get into the Colts later on. The Jaguars are 1-1, could be easily 2-0. And not to mention you have the Houston Texans, who are the heavy favorites in that division, with C.J. Stroud on a top-five defense. And DeMeco Ryans is the head coach. So to me, the AFC South is quickly becoming a better division. Quickly. And then the laughing stock of that division, the Tennessee Titans, have Cam Ward, who's showing flashes of being a star quarterback. But the problem is the rest of the team stinks. So the AFC South's getting much more competitive and much better than I thought it would be, which is good to see. But if you're Cincinnati, man, that's a killer. Just throughout the day, it just got worse and worse. It was, oh, questionable the return. Okay, looks like it's turf toe. Okay, that's a few weeks. It's nothing bad. It's the Brock Purdy injury. It's not ideal. We'd love to have him, but it's not the end of the world. Then you hear it's the worst kind of turf toe, and it needs surgery. It's 3 months. That's just brutal. Man. I'm like lost for words. Because we said on this program, if the Bengals get off to a good start, they're going to be in contention to win the Super Bowl this year. It's just they always shoot themselves in the foot and they play their best football at the end of the year, and it's too little too late. This year, they finally start off 2-0. Good start, but then they lose Joe Burrow. Oh, my goodness. Crazy. Last thing I want to touch on before we go to break here on the Tommy John Show. We have to talk about that wild Cowboys and Giants game. Credit Russell Wilson. Credit the Giants offense. They played outstanding. Should have won the football game. But my goodness, do they find ways to lose. And I get it. Some Giants fans are going to look at some positives today. Malik Nabers established himself as an elite wide receiver yesterday. Cam Scottaboo can run the rock. Russell Wilson showed signs of Seattle Russell Wilson. But the one thing I loved about this Giants team before the year and thought they could be competitive was the defense. And I know this is the same offense, Dallas, that looked good against the Eagles a week ago. But the Giants' defense could not get a stop if their life depended on it. Even when Russell Wilson throws the deep ball to Neighbors to pretty much win the game, I thought it was over. They get just a couple of first downs, and then Brandon Aubrey from 64. And then I know they made some stops in overtime, but come on, you let Dallas do that to you? In a game where your offense, for some reason, is just firing on all cylinders, you cannot get one key stop. And if you look at that defensive line, Thibodeau, Brian Burns, the rookie Abdul Carter, Lawrence, it's loaded. And then you can't get off the field. I know the Giants played okay yesterday. They scored all those points. It's just, I don't know if Dable's the guy. I don't. I really don't. That was a brutal loss yesterday by the Giants. Credit Schottenheimer. Clearly knows what he's doing on offense. And imagine if that defense had Micah Parsons. It would be a lot better. And Jerry Jones once again got in his team's way. But this is an offense. Dak, when healthy, is a baller. CeeDee Lamb's an elite wide receiver. George Pickens as a number two is a great wide receiver. This Williams kid running out of the backfield is tremendous. That Dallas offense is humming. The tight end, Ferguson, great tight end. But both defenses in the NFC East, though the Giants and the Cowboys defenses. My goodness. It was an incredible game. One of the most entertaining games I've ever seen. But not an ounce of defense. Not an ounce. And I know people are going to mention the pick Dallas made at the end. That was just Russ being an idiot, throwing the ball up into the air. He did it 100 times that day. Oh, it's going to work again. He had no business throwing that ball, and it gets picked. But to me, Jerry Jones let down the Cowboys fans again because they have an elite, elite offense, but that defense stinks, and they can't get after the quarterback. Oh, but know who can get after the quarterback? Micah Parsons, who you had. So to me, this Dallas Cowboys team is going to be in a playoff push. They're going to be right around 10 wins for me. But in a big playoff game, when they need a stop, who's going to be the big guy to go out there and get it for them on defense? I trust their offense, and I like Schottenheimer through 2 weeks. But you cannot tell me this team is going to go anywhere with that defense. The Giants, okay, your defense stinks, which I thought would be better, but there wasn't a whole lot of expectations this year. The Cowboys went out and got George Pickens, are paying Dak Prescott a fortune, are paying CeeDee Lamb a fortune, and they're going to come up short because that defense cannot stop anyone. Imagine if they had Micah Parsons. Imagine. They would have a pass rush, and they'd be a true threat in the NFC. Because that all, I'm going to be real right now. I was wrong about Schottenheimer. That offense looks tremendous. But that defense, man, you know it's going to kill Dallas later in the year. You just know it. But a great football game, incredibly entertaining. And if the Giants offense plays like that against Kansas City on Sunday night, look out. Look out. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. That the Jackson Dart talk has slowed down a little bit. Russ was so bad week one. Everyone was asking, when's he going to play? He's going to play soon. Jackson Dart's going to play soon. I don't think so. Russ bought himself a little bit of time. Even though Dart came in for a few trick plays and stuff here and there, it was never happening in that game. It was never happening where Jackson Dart was going to take over. He came in for a few plays, and Russ played too well. And Russ bought himself a little bit of time. We'll see what happens. We're going to take our first break, and when we come back, we have to talk about what is going on in Miami. The Patriots getting a big win in there. Down south is Mike McDaniel on the hot seat. And, of course, we have to talk about that awful Sunday night game yesterday. J.J. McCarthy stunk up the joint. We'll get into that as well. I'm Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. Back after this quick word from our sponsors. Do not go away.
Hey, do you love movies? Discover the best of art house cinema in three theaters all across the city. That is Cinéma du Musée, du Parc, and Beaubien. Students only pay $11 per ticket, all day, every day. See you at the movies.
Do you like bubble baths? Hot cocoa on cold night? Snuggling up with a sweetie and listening to the radio? Well, if you answered yes to at least two of those, might I suggest Advice by the Fireplace, CJLO's number one easy-listening comedy advice talk radio show hosted by me, Delilah Karen. We bring on a guest or two from the Montreal comedy world to answer real advice questions and maybe share a few funny stories along the way. Advice by the Fireplace, every Wednesday from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. right here on CJLO 1690. Oh, also, I love you.
Here on the Tommy John Show. So we also have to mention the Chicago Bears. We sat here throughout the entirety of the summer when we had just baseball and a few tennis tournaments and golf to talk about, just daydreaming for shows like this where we can talk about NFL football. We spent those days talking about how will Ben Johnson impact the Bears? How will Caleb Williams look? Look at the amount of firepower they have. Cole Kmet and Loveland at tight end. Rome Odunze. DJ Moore. They drafted Luther Burden. DeAndre Swift. Invested in the offensive line with Joe Tooney and the, was it Dahlman, the center from Atlanta, and Jonah Jackson. They and Darnell Wright still there at right tackle. The Bears are loaded. Can anyone explain yesterday? Seriously, can anyone explain yesterday? And people will rush to say Caleb Williams' fault, Caleb Williams' fault. I didn't think he was awful. Him and Rome Odunze had a good connection yesterday. That defense was appalling. And I told everyone the Lions would be better than people thought. They won 15 games last year. You think you lose one coordinator, you're going to go to seven? And I know their schedule is brutal, but they looked like the greatest show on turf yesterday. Amaron St. Brown was incredible. Jahmyr Gibbs was incredible. Jared Goff was the best quarterback in football yesterday. It was alarming if you're a Bears fan. Alarming. They couldn't do anything. They scored on the first drive again. That's a positive. And then you have to hear that Jalen Johnson, their best defensive player, is out indefinitely with a groin injury. So when it rains, it pours in Chicago. We talked about the Bengals being cursed in the AFC. The Bears, it looks like they gave up everything for that 85 Bears team. It's like they made a deal with the devil. We want to have the greatest football team of all time in 1985. Your punishment is you'll stink for eternity. In the most loaded quarterback draft class of all time, at the time they wisely chose the best collegiate quarterback, and he stinks right now. They finally get the offensive guru. The defense goes to hell. What do you want me to say? This team stinks. It stinks. And it wasn't all on Caleb Williams. He shows flashes of USC Heisman winning Caleb Williams. He shows flashes. Some of the throws he makes, you're like, damn, that was rifled in there. But it's too many abandoning the pocket early, rolling out right, throwing the ball away. There's too much of that. That pick he threw was horrendous. There was no reason on second and 30 to throw that ball. But the defense sucks. They're having zero run game. This is not a good football team. And I trust that Ben Johnson will figure it out at one point. He's too good of an offensive coach not to. But this is a problem. 2 weeks ago, the Bears had so much hype around him. Caleb Williams looked excellent in the preseason. They stink. And the Lions are better than people think. Are the Lions going to win the NFC? I don't think so. I think their defense is still okay. But their offense is good. They got too much firepower there. This Isaac Tesla guy is making highlight reel catches weekly now. The Lions will be fine. The Bears stink. And I feel for their fan base because it's great fans. They are a Bears town. They're not a Bulls town anymore. They're not. I know people love the Cubs, but there's also the White Sox in there. The Blackhawks, my goodness, are a disaster. But still, that city lives and dies by the Chicago Bears. And that city is in mourning today. Ben Johnson going to Detroit, back where he made his name as the greatest coordinator of all time, went back to Detroit, and Detroit took out all the anger they had on the Chicago Bears. Don't get me wrong. I think Ben Johnson's a good coach, and he had a whole lot to do with the Lions' success. And I think Lions players would admit it. But Lions players have been hearing that they're going to have the worst season ever because they lost Aaron Glenn and they lost Ben Johnson. They don't have the same coordinators and the players are no good without the coaches. They heard all that yesterday. And they made it a statement to run up the score on Ben Johnson. Oh yeah, we suck as an offense without you. Here's 50. Here's Jahmyr Gibbs. Here's Amon-Ra St. Brown. Here's Jared Goff looking like the MVP of the league. The Bears were awful, but the Lions made it a point to embarrass them and embarrass Ben Johnson. That's what it was. We suck without you. Boom. That was a statement. And credit Dan Campbell. When the Lions lose a football game, usually they respond the next week. I don't know how many it's been now, but it feels like every time the Lions lose in the last 2 years, they respond the next week. And they love playing for Dan Campbell. And Dan Campbell, that got to feel good for him too. That must have felt amazing because he was hurt. He's just a bonehead loser. Without Ben Johnson, Aaron Glenn, he's nothing. And then he does that. Killed the Bears yesterday. They killed them. And I'm happy for the city of Detroit, but I feel bad for the Bears fans, man. And honestly, Caleb Williams was one of the bright spots. Roma Dunze was one of the bright spots. That's how bad the Bears defense played yesterday. That was awful. Awful, awful, awful. Speaking of awful, we can get into the officiating. I wrote that down as well. Not just in the NFL, but in college too. Notre Dame got hosed at the end when A&M takes the lead. That was one of the most blatant holding calls I've ever seen. The guard tackles the pass rusher, preventing him to get to the quarterback. They don't throw a flag, and Notre Dame ends up losing, and their season's pretty much over at 0-2. But that was awful. The Travis Hunter PI on the Jags game yesterday, awful. And then that Broncos-Colts leverage penalty was a disgrace, too. That killed Denver. But it's a problem. And in that Dolphins-Patriots game, it was flags all over the place. These officials stink. And the fact that they do not go out and make these guys train 24/7 as officials, like in the offseason, trying to get better, is nuts to me. The NFL makes more money than God. They have more money than God. And they don't do, like, training seminars in the offseason. Is crazy. Or you can't challenge certain penalties. Because they get it wrong. They have the best technology in the world. Cameras at every angle of the stadium. But we can't challenge a penalty. Like, we can't challenge that Travis Hunter pass interference. It's crazy. So the officials are a huge loser for me this week. And you know who else is a big, big loser this week? The Minnesota Vikings. That was appalling. Their defense is very good. Helped them stay in the game as long as possible. But J.J. McCarthy, okay, you had a kid on Friday. Very hectic week. Had the emotional win on Monday night. He was so bad, it was crazy. And he's in maybe the best situation you would want a quarterback to be in. Kevin O'Connell, a decent offensive line. Justin Jefferson. TJ Hawkinson, two good backs, Mason and Aaron Jones. Jordan Addison's going to be back in a few weeks. And he looked awful. And let's be honest, through eight quarters of football, he's had one good quarter. The first three quarters of the Bears game last Monday night, he was awful. Fourth quarter, he was great. He was not good for a second of that football game. J.J. McCarthy sucked for every second of that Sunday night game. And I'm not hitting the panic button. He's a rookie. It's his second start. He literally had a child on Friday. There's a lot of distractions. Home opener, Sunday night football. All right, we get it. But that was appalling as well. And Minnesota's a good football team. Very good defense. Brian Flores is an amazing coordinator. Kevin O'Connell is a quarterback whisperer. But J.J. McCarthy stunk up the joint. And trust me, it's only going to get the media talking more as, Jesus, was this guy just a merchant of having a great run game in college? Can he actually produce in the NFL? Is he the guy in Minnesota? Not entirely. Who knows? I don't know. And I like J.J. McCarthy. He seems like a leader. He takes responsibility. Seems like a great guy. But that was a terrible performance. Terrible. Against the Falcons? All right, they have talent, but the Falcons? Really? Okay. I was not impressed at all. They were a huge, huge loser for me yesterday. And they got Cincinnati next weekend. That's going to be a big, big question mark. How will Cincinnati play with Jake Browning? But my real question of that game is, how will J.J. McCarthy, a very young quarterback inexperienced, respond against a good football team? But that was a terrible performance. Terrible. Speaking of terrible, we have to talk about the Miami Dolphins. That was bad. And they played tough. I thought they played hard. They stayed in that football game. They were resilient. But in the critical spots, they stink. They stink. Early in the game, they stunk. And then when they had a chance to take advantage of New England kind of being stuck in the mud for a little bit, Tua has these brain farts. He overthrew Tyreek Hill by a mile. That awful pick near the end of the game. Oh, my God. He threw it right to Mapu, the guy in the Patriots. He threw it right to him. And we can look at Tua and say, oh my God, you stink, and get Tyreek Hill out of there. The offense is a problem, which it's not great. But the bigger problem for the Dolphins is that defense. Oh my goodness. They let the Colts look like the greatest show on turf. Then they have Drake May and the Patriots go up and down the field on them. That defense sucks. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens in Miami over the next few weeks. They have the Bills in Buffalo on Thursday night. So a short week against the hottest team and the best player in football. I want to see how that one goes. They're a 12.5-point underdog right now. So that's 0-3. So the real question is not if Mike McDaniel gets fired, it's when. And I hate it for him. I think he's a good coach. He's a good offensive mind. He turned the Dolphins around post the Brian Flores era. He had Tua making Pro Bowls. He had Tyreek Hill setting receiving records for the Dolphins. But it seems like it has run its course. And they had that year when they lost to Kansas City in the snow, when they fell apart the second half of the year and the injuries killed them. But that was the year the Dolphins were a factor. And then it just hasn't been the same since. And I feel for the coach. I feel for the owner. But it's not a good place. They gave Tua that huge contract, which was not the wisest move in the world. And then you lose other pieces. It's the Dolphins are a mess. That was a tale of two teams going in two different directions, in my opinion. To me, the Patriots aren't a good team. The Dolphins aren't a good team. But the Dolphins were a good team. The Patriots were a bad team. The Patriots are just slowly building it, piecing it together. They have Mike Vrabel, a young stud quarterback, and a team that plays hard and plays for their coach. And they're heading in one direction. They're both bad, both not going to make the playoffs. But you have one team that's on the way up, and you had one team who's on the way down. And yesterday, the Dolphins and the Patriots passed each other in that horrible, horrible era of the NFL that's called mediocrity. But the Patriots are on their way up, and the Dolphins are on their way down and have officially gone below New England. I know what's scary. For the Dolphins, that's next is the Jets. Next is the Jets in that division. And I could easily see the Jets surpassing the Dolphins this year. And the Jets stink. If you watched them against Buffalo yesterday, they can't do anything. And Justin Fields, one week, looks like he's the MVP of the league. The next week, he forgets how to play. So that's very alarming. But the Patriots, that's a very good win for them. I know we just grilled the Dolphins, but the Patriots are not a good football team. They're just looking for any positives. They were resilient. They should have been up by I don't know how many points in the first half. The kicker couldn't make anything. Then they lose the lead. Then Drake May responds. Drake May played very well yesterday. That was a very good game by him. Super efficient. He had three touchdowns. He didn't turn the ball over. He looked comfortable. Drake May looked like a stud quarterback yesterday, which is very encouraging for New England. The offensive line held up much better. Will Campbell looks like a stud. That other kid, Wilson, they picked from Georgia in the fourth round, looks like a stud at guard. So it's starting to move a little bit. Now they're desperately missing Christian Gonzalez right now. They need him in the worst way because that pass defense stinks. But the defensive line is moving. They're leading the league in sacks. And you can slowly see Mike Vrabel molding these players, which is very encouraging. To me, they're another year, at least probably 2 years away from competing in the AFC. But it's just encouraging to see a team that's fighting, a team that's getting better, a young quarterback that's developing nicely. It's just good to see. It really is. We're going to take our second break, and when we come back, we'll talk a bit about college football, and we'll talk about the games tonight. Wow, it's pivotal for the Texans to get a win at home against Baker Mayfield and the Buccaneers. I'm Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. Back after this quick word from our sponsors. Do not go away.
Arts in the Margins present Festival Flux, a Montreal experimental music festival taking place from October 1st to 11th. Festival Flux is a unique mix of concerts, workshops, roundtables, presentations, talks, and publication launches, all configured around community, care, and the sonic arts. You won't want to miss innovative artists such as Beam Splitter, Anif Jacques and Ryoko Akama, Bozzini Quartet, Andrew Cyril, Christina Warren, Violence Gratuite, Nada El Shazly, and more. For more information on the festival and how to get tickets, visit fluxmtl.org.
Do you love hip-hop and R&B? Is your Thursday afternoon lacking groove? I'm DJ Samuel D. Roberts, and I got you covered. Listen to my show, Whip Appeal. I'll be playing hip-hop bangers, R&B slow jams, and everything in between from Canada and around the globe to groove up your Thursday afternoon. Listen to Whip Appeal, Thursdays at 2 p.m. CJLO 1690 AM.
Back here in the Tommy John Show, we'll quickly talk about Major League Baseball because it is the push for the postseason. The Blue Jays getting a huge sweep of the Baltimore Orioles over the weekend. Alejandro Kirk was clutch on Saturday, and then they got great, great pitching yesterday and on Friday. So the Blue Jays now have a nice four-game lead over the New York Yankees. They have a 5.5-game lead over the Red Sox. They look to be in the clear in the AL East. They got a big four-game series against the Rays. They play the Red Sox later on. Believe they have Kansas City as well. Yeah, they end the year 4 games in Tampa. Then they're at Kansas City for 3. Then they're home against the Red Sox and Rays to close out the year. But they're in a very good spot. The Tigers leading the way in the AL Central. The Mariners leading the way in the AL West. So right now, it is the Yankees, Red Sox, and Astros as the 3 wildcard teams. The Texas Rangers, though, only 2 back. So that's interesting. We head to the National League. The Mets are in a free fall. They're 2-8 in their last 10. They lost 6 in a row. They got the big win yesterday in extra innings. They only have a 1.5-game lead on the Giants for the last wild card. So it's the Cubs, Padres, Mets, the 3 wild card teams. Obviously, the Brewers, Phillies, Dodgers leading the way in their respective divisions. So that's where we stand in Major League Baseball. What a game between Georgia and Tennessee. That is an instant classic. Georgia getting it done in overtime. Just Tennessee cannot beat the Bulldogs. It's crazy. What a performance by Gunnar Stockton and Georgia's offense. Usually it's the defense who gets the wins for Georgia. Huge win by the Bulldogs. And Texas A&M, albeit controversial, get a big win in South Bend, Indiana against Notre Dame. Quickly about Houston tonight. So the Houston Texans, this game is very important because if they start the year 0-2, they are immediately 2 games back of a red-hot Daniel Jones and the Indianapolis Colts. Now, we can question that call at the end of the game with the kick against the Broncos. That was an amazing win by the Colts. And if the Texans fall to 0-2, that could be a very dangerous spot for the Houston Texans. The offensive line's still concerning. They're trying to get these new pieces up to speed, the rookies from Iowa State. They're obviously missing Tank Dell in the worst way. He's out for the whole year. It's a very, very interesting game for Houston. And if you look at the Colts' schedule, they have Tennessee next week. They should win that one. There's the Cardinals coming up. Tennessee again. There's winnable games on this schedule for the Colts. And if they just went out and beat the Broncos, who people have who have money on to make it to the Super Bowl, they can beat anyone. But they have a great offensive line. The defense, they added to it in the offseason. It's a very good defense. You got to give Shane Steichen all the credit in the world. When he has competent quarterback play, he fires up some plays. And this Tyler Warren kid from Penn State's tremendous. The Colts are a very good football team. So if they see a team like Houston fall to 0-2, trust me, they're going to play motivated and ready to go the rest of the year. So this is a huge game for the Houston Texans tonight against Tampa Bay. If they fall to 0-2, they might be in deep trouble in the AFC South. So that is a huge game tonight, Tampa Bay and Houston. Thank you guys for listening. We'll be back next Monday, 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern, right here on CJLO 1690 AM. Cannot wait to talk about week number 3.
Hey, this is White.